Today's Washing Tech episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at washingtech.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And also Warby Parker. Get a free 5-day home try-on at warbyparkertrial.com/joe. 5 pairs, 5 days, and the try-on is 100% free. That's warbyparkertrial.com/joe.
There's kind of like this way that we aren't necessarily equalizing the people that we are working for. And that's a huge issue that I've seen with nonprofits and the language that they use.
Welcome to the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast. We deliver the latest tech policy news and brightest tech policy experts to you. Wherever you are, so that you can stay productive, relevant, and informed in less time. From Washington, D.C., it's the Washing Tech Tech Policy Podcast with Joe Miller.
It's the final Washing Tech episode until the new year. The NAACP has launched a logout boycott of Facebook. YouTube removed 58 million videos in the last quarter, and Amber Janwell is my guest today. The NAACP has launched a boycott of Facebook following reports that the Kremlin specifically used Facebook and other social media to recruit African Americans and other people of color to support Donald Trump. The NAACP is calling on Facebook users to log out of Facebook for one day today, Tuesday, December 18th. Data analysts from the University of Oxford submitted a report to the Senate Intelligence Committee on Monday, yesterday, analyzing how Russians infiltrated social media to spread pro-Trump propaganda leading up to the 2016 presidential election. And we've got a link to coverage in the show notes, but Russian operatives working for the Internet Research Agency, the propaganda arm of the Kremlin, sought to entice African Americans and other people of color to host events, start coalitions, and engage in other activities on American soil to gin up support for Donald Trump. These were leaflets. So even though the Kremlin used other social media platforms, including Twitter, Google, and others, to promote propaganda, and the report to the Senate Intelligence Committee says that these companies may have evaded Congress and provided incomplete data sets during testimony over the past year, this was the icing on the cake for the NAACP as far as Facebook's concerned. The 110-year-old civil rights organization found a persistent pattern of anti-democratic tactics that have repeatedly implicated Facebook since the 2016 presidential election cycle. To add insult to injury, Facebook revealed yet another breach affecting private photos of some 6.8 million users last week. We made the revelations last week, that is. So this goes far beyond smart lawyering. Tech companies' testimony before Congress all year came with legal implications, and as long as they didn't commit perjury, disclosing as little as possible is frankly well within their Fifth Amendment rights. But there's a particular quality to Facebook that's fundamentally different from other platforms because it's so pervasive and so personal. YouTube reports that it removed some 58 million videos during the past quarter for violating community standards. The Google unit said that 72% of the videos promoted spam or were misleading. YouTube also removed 1.67 million channels during the same period. The web giant Cloudflare apparently provides cybersecurity services to at least 7 foreign terrorist organizations and militant groups, according to the Huffington Post. All of the groups are listed on the State Department's list of foreign terrorist organizations. Jesslyn Cook has the report in the Huffington Post. The AP reports that Iranian hackers hacked into the personal email accounts of U.S. officials last month to attempt to thwart the Trump administration's new sanctions. The AP obtained the data from London-based security firm Certfa. Rafael Satter has more coverage over at the Associated Press. The FCC voted last week to allow internet service providers to block some text messages, supposedly to prevent spam. Opponents say it's a threat to net neutrality and gives ISPs too much control over content, in this case, texts.
West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin moved to block Republican FCC Commissioner Brendan Carr's nomination to the FCC after the Republican-controlled agency voted to block the expansion of wireless internet service to rural areas. Carr's term is actually already expired. It expired back on June 30th. And if the current Congress doesn't vote to approve a new five-year term by January 3rd, which is when the current Congress concludes, and we move into the next session of Congress, Carr will need to step down. However, he could still be renominated and confirmed by the Senate, which is what happened with Jessica Rosenworcel. You can find links to all of these stories in the show notes and also on our Twitter feed, and our handle is at Washing Tech. Stay with us. For Washing Tech, Tech Policy Podcast listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You can listen at the gym, in the car, or on your morning run. How about Call Them By Their True Names by Rebecca Solnit? You can download Call Them By Their True Names free by trying audible.com. Sign up for your free audiobook and 30-day free trial today at washingtech.com/book.
Washing Tech, the inclusive voice of tech policy. Because America won't stand still for the same old insiders. 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 Washington. Moving the needle.
My guest today is Amber Janwell, marketing strategist and branding expert for nonprofits and innovative tech companies. The focus on social impact, her partners utilize future technologies to disrupt the system while prioritizing diversity and inclusion, community engagement, and social justice. Tech startup project manager turned creative director turned agency co-founder, Amber works closely and independently as a strategist, bringing marketing, event production, and branding skills together through her work. She's spoken at a variety of conferences and has been featured in many publications, including 7 & 7, BBC Media, Vanity Fair, Forbes, Digital LA, Honey Book, We Rule, and more. Please welcome Amber Janwell. Amber Janwell, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So we're here today to learn more about how to implement a digital marketing strategy in a nonprofit organization. But first, I want to hear more about Good Call, the organization you just joined as a marketing strategist. Tell us about it.
So Good Call is an organization in New York City that offers a hotline to call if you get arrested. So when you call the hotline, you are connected to a lawyer that can give you immediate support. So let me just quickly give you a few stats on why this is so important. In New York City, less than 1% of those arrested have a lawyer they can call immediately. And since there are over 300,000 arrests in New York City every year, and 75% of those arrested are released the first time they see a judge, it's clear that many arrests are really unnecessary. Mm-hmm. Often, those that are remaining in that percentage, so it's almost 50,000, are actually held in jail for an average of 50 days while they're just awaiting trial. So this is before they're even convicted of any crime. In the U.S., on any given day, almost 500,000 people are in local jails without being convicted of a crime, and a large percentage of these are people of color. When you can't afford bail, many end up pleading guilty to move a sentence along since they didn't have immediate access to legal representation. So the hope for Good Call is to reduce pretrial jail in addition to providing immediate support to a lawyer if arrested. Often the conditions and treatments in these pretrial jails, in addition to the time wasted and spent there, can be really devastating. For example, Khalif Browder is obviously an example of why pretrial jail can be so terrible and how the lack of adequate support and representation can lead to horrible outcomes. And his story specifically means a lot to Good Call because it's exactly the kind of thing that we hope to prevent in the future by providing people with the immediate support that they deserve.
So I often tell folks that as policy professionals, we're also more and more having to become skilled digital marketers. And in decades past, when you could just rely on having a law degree or master's or PhD to do the analysis, you know, it was fine. But today it's communications and marketing professionals whose skills are really central to successful advocacy and telling an organization's story, because funders now, they want to see a return on that investment. And you can't do that stuff if you're not able to package what you offer constituents and members in a meaningful way and in a way that maintains engagement. So give us a few insights, Amber, into what you think are three or four skills that you think all policy professionals should have in addition to their substantive expertise if they're going to be able to execute on successful campaigns.
Yeah, so the major thing that I talk about with policy professionals and then also people from the development sector, like nonprofit world, is that they either need to understand how to be a translator to the general audience or they need a translator. And so a lot of the general work that I do in branding and marketing actually ends up being directly related to that, like kind of like political and development sector language, and turning it into something that is not only understandable, but also relatable to a more general audience. So that's kind of like the major starting point to being able to actually market yourself or market your organization in a way that's able to broaden its scope of who will be actually listening to the work that you do and engaged with it. And on a very general level, like my hope is that we can engage the larger audiences so that we can become more involved in these issues that affect us every day. So that's first off. Second, I think that while I say translating, while I say discuss the way that you are promoting yourself to a larger audience, I don't necessarily mean dumb it down. It's typically more so along the lines of we need to be able to simplify it and make it a little bit clearer and to a certain extent just like cut to the chase. Because a lot of times we are so used to speaking to our social bubbles that we don't really like understand that we're actually speaking a lot of jargon that isn't understandable to everybody, regardless of what industry they're in. And if we want our communities to be more engaged in social issues, we have to make it clear that they are also welcome in the conversation. Mm-hmm.
So what would you say is sort of, you know, different between, when it comes to digital marketing, what's sort of the main differences between being in a for-profit environment and versus a nonprofit?
Yeah. So obviously the main difference is the way that these companies are making money and raising funds. So with nonprofit organizations, something that I've, gotten into in the last few years has just been a lot of trying to focus on unrestricted funding. And that's really huge within the nonprofit sector. And then when you're talking about marketing for-profit companies, they typically have very specific goals, whether it be sales or increasing the number of users, to a certain extent, gathering more data on users. There's like a very different goal that they have. And because of that, the language that they use on a marketing level has to be vastly different. But I think a lot of times we actually forget how much of a crossover there is, because for a product to be able to sell, whether it be us selling our services as a nonprofit and gaining a larger audience that hopefully will help us in fundraising, that we actually really just need to be promoting like the lifestyle of what it is that we are doing, whether it be a for-profit company or a nonprofit organization. When you're promoting a product to be like, okay, cool, like this is what we're selling, like we can make that obvious. But I think nonprofits have a really, really tough time like actually breaking down what it is, because so many nonprofits work across a variety of levels. And the work that they're doing is impacting people. And so there's also like, aside from the fact that you are still marketing something, you definitely need to be careful about the way that you're utilizing it. Even just when you're talking about the audience that is impacted by those funds, I think we've all kind of seen it, but especially if you're talking about like nonprofit organizations that are international and maybe have like different bases in like, let's say Africa, because that's like, like a general example, like a lot of times there's kind of like this way that we aren't necessarily equalizing the people that we are working for. And that's a huge issue that I've seen with nonprofits and the language that they use and kind of making it seem as if the people that we are working for to a certain extent are lower than us. And therefore that's like the way that they utilize marketing, and it's really unhealthy and it doesn't benefit either side.
Mm-hmm. That's almost like sounding like you're in an ivory tower being very condescending, especially, I don't want to say too much about DC, but DC is a very different language than I think is happening in local communities. And I think they're to some extent be sort of out of touch. Would you agree with that assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've sat on a couple of boards for nonprofits, and sometimes I'm just astounded by the way that the board members will speak about the people that are impacted by the work that we're doing. And it's on that very personal level, right? So even on a greater level, when you're talking about the marketing, it's understanding like truly who your product is benefiting, how it's a larger community, and we are not any better than they are just because we are the ones working for it at this very moment.
Well, Amber, thanks for joining me. You're obviously an asset to Good Call, and they're very fortunate to have you. Now let's turn to your icebreaker, your career hack, and your pick for our book this week.
Perfect. Let's do it.
Okay, so it's time for this week's icebreaker. I'm just going to spin the wheel here and see what random question we've got for you today. All right, what's the best piece of advice you've ever had?
You know what? So actually, when I was younger, like when I was a young teenager, like my family was going through a lot, and we had like, my parents had like a pretty long and nasty divorce, and I had taken up a lot of responsibility at a pretty young age. And my grandmother is like this rock hard Mexican woman. Like, she just never shows emotion. She's the head of everybody in our family. Like, just everybody knows it. But when she saw us going through all of these things, it took a while, but she actually told me one time that if you want to be able to truly love, you have to have to fight for it. And I feel like if you know me well, you know how much I truly and deeply care. And her words at that moment, like, always stuck to me. And I actually got my first tattoo based off of that. But that moment to me, like, on a very personal level, like outside of thinking about something that's motivational for, you know, work and career, like, has been something that I've really held on to.
What was the tattoo of?
So it says, "All who love are fighters." It's just the quote.
Oh, it's from you. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, you're certainly one of the most prolific people in my Instagram feed. You're constantly on the move all over the world, and somehow you still manage to get it done. What's your secret?
Thank you. So, I mean, honestly, I've just always been incredibly stubborn about being capable of accessing multiple things that I want at a time. I truly don't believe that you need to choose between happiness and the dream career. And maybe that's partially because I really love the work that I do, and maybe also because I'm a bit of a workaholic. But I don't think that fully distancing yourself from the possibility of also traveling and having fun while doing those things is a healthy or ideal way to live.
What are you reading or watching these days?
So I'm currently reading this book. It's called Call Them by Their True Names by Rebecca Solnit. It's great so far. And I'm also watching Hasan Minhaj's new show on Netflix.
Well, thanks again, Amber, for joining me. What are some final ideas you'd like to leave with us, and where can we find you?
Yeah, so honestly, I just love being the person people connect with to share and brainstorm ideas. So feel free to do that. Connect with me on social. It's at Amber Janual. My name doesn't make it easy to share via voice, so it's Amber, A-M-B-A-R, J-A-N-U-E-L.
And you've been listening to Amber Janual, marketing strategist for Good Call. Amber, thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
That concludes episode 167 of the podcast. Thanks so much for listening. You won't be hearing from me for the next couple weeks. We publish on Tuesdays, and both Christmas and New Year's fall on Tuesdays this year. So I'm out, but I'll see you back here on January 8th. If you like what we do, we'd love to hear from you. Please take a moment, head over to Apple Podcasts. Give it a review. It helps others know what they can expect from the show and really helps us out. Thanks again for listening. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. See you in 2019. Peace.